there's a quote, and I think it's from Ray Peet's PhD paper. It says that the key idea was that energy and structure are interdependent at every level. That might explain some of the effects on the energetic metabolism and chronic disease.
There's still a lot of debate around the mechanisms and no clear answer. We only have working theories for now, and the main theory is a sort of anti-stress effect. One thing we do know for sure is that there's an expulsion of nitric oxide from the mitochondria and the cell in general shortly after exposure to red and infrared light. So nitric oxide is a pretty harmful chemical in that it prevents our mitochondria from using oxygen. Specifically, it's binding to the same site in the cytochrome C oxidase molecule as oxygen does. So it's just totally blocking the energy-producing pathway in our mitochondria. You know, and red and infrared light are working to dissociate the nitric oxide from this position, thereby allowing oxygen to be processed again and for normal respiration to continue. So the result of this, of light hitting the mitochondria, is higher energy production than was happening while the nitric oxide was there. And this leads to higher carbon dioxide, higher ATP, and a whole host of downstream effects from those.
I don't know if you're familiar with Otto Warburg, but he said that a primary marker for cancer was the inability of the cell to use oxygen, even in the presence of oxygen or excessive glycolysis. And I wonder how that plays in.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with the exact molecular mechanisms of CO2 in the body, but I know that CO2 helps to improve bone density. DNA and genetic expression, it helps to speed up wound healing, increases longevity, improves blood circulation to the brain and other places. I think the effects of carbon dioxide are pretty much identical to the effects we see after light therapy, you know, with the removal of nitric oxide. And it's just allowing your cells to use oxygen again, and that's leading to a greater CO2 production through our normal respiration. So basically, light therapy is exerting its effect to some extent by improved tissue CO2 levels. So all of the benefits that you would usually link to carbon dioxide can also be linked to red and infrared light therapy.
Often nitric oxide tends to be a backup mechanism when CO2 fails.
Well, yeah, I mean, nitric oxide does have other functions and other pathways in the body. It's not necessarily always a negative chemical. Like it can be used to improve things like vasodilation. It's definitely like you said, a backup mechanism to CO2. I think CO2 is seen in the ideal healthy state of a cell or of our bodies. And nitric oxide is like a short-term adaptation in times of stress. It's trying to help us survive for short periods. But yeah, it is definitely a strange interaction that's happening there.
We talked a little bit about, I think the name is Tina Ikaru, and the absorption of certain light photons by cytochrome C oxidase.
Sure. Yeah, well, this theory is based around two copper atoms that help to form the structure of cytochrome C oxidase in our mitochondria. So supposedly these atoms are where the light at specific red and infrared wavelengths are absorbed, you know, with the peak wavelengths of 620, 670, 760, and 830 being absorbed most readily. What the light's doing is either oxidizing or reducing the atoms, you know, so it's changing the electrical state of these atoms. Which just helps to move electrons through this whole electron transport chain, which is ultimately responsible for improving ATP production.
Would there be an increased need for copper with red light exposure or with activating cytochrome C oxidase?
Yeah. This is an interesting question that I never thought about. I don't think that the copper in cytochrome is necessarily being used up in any way by the light, but you know, it's just that the chemical state is being temporarily modified. I suppose the net effects of light therapy do stimulate new mitochondria formation, known as mitochondriogenesis. So I think maybe there might be a slight increased need for copper, because you're going to need that copper as the backbone in the new mitochondria. So I'm not sure, but I'd say maybe.
And do you know how that's been measured, or how it's known that there's an increased creation of new mitochondria with exposure?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that thyroid hormone has this same effect where it will stimulate your cells to make new mitochondria. I think with light therapy, the mechanism is supposedly reactive oxygen species, and they're involved in a sort of cell signaling to the DNA, which stimulates new mitochondria formation. But I really need to read more about that before talking about it with confidence.
You've written a little bit about reactive oxygen species.
Yeah, sure. This is something that the photobiomodulation researchers talk about quite often. An increased amount of reactive oxygen species are seen after exposure to red or infrared light in a cell. There are many different types of reactive oxygen species, and I think it's fair to say that they do have a legitimate function in the body, even if in high amounts they're linked to, you know, the free radical theory of aging and different things, different damage to the cell. I think the function at low concentrations involves cell signaling, you know, mitochondria formation like we just mentioned, and changes in DNA expression. But I do think these reactive oxygen species are probably the best explanation for the biphasic dose response that we talked about before. You know, in low amounts, the reactive oxygen species have a function in a cell, but in high amounts, there's just too much going on and they cause damage. So the optimal dose of light for a cell will give enough energy to create low amounts of these reactive oxygen species, but high doses of light can lead to potentially damaging levels. And that's perhaps the explanation for the biphasic dose response.
And the benefits of increased oxidative metabolism and ATP are opposite to what would be listed as hypothyroid symptoms, which is nearly everything. But can you maybe tell us some of the benefits of increased oxidative metabolism?
There's lots of things. I think in general, you can think of light therapy as providing an anti-hypothyroid effect, like you said. And the effects of thyroid hormone are fairly similar to light therapy in that they both give increased ATP production, which has a lot of benefits as well. Using light as a way to improve ATP production can help to stop this vicious cycle of hypothyroidism. Yeah, we know this from long-term follow-up studies, which show that the effects of light can be long-lasting. You know, that the temporary removal of nitric oxide brings the cell back into a healthy state, and that healthy state is maintained more easily. So whatever function that cell has, like in generating hormones or generating red blood cells or building collagen, not too much, not too little, you know, light therapy is going to provide benefits to all these cells, you know, potentially for weeks and months after. So this increased energy level is going to give you better wound healing, less inflammation, better blood flow, you know, better skin tone, you know, on your brain, better thinking, you know, reduced chance of injury. You know, just so many benefits. You remove the nitric oxide and that helps you create more ATP and CO2. And the increased ATP and CO2 stop you from producing excessive nitric oxide in the first place. So you're on this positive feedback loop towards health just from, you know, a single photon of red light, potentially.
One of the things I've seen mentioned many times, but I haven't gone down that rabbit hole, is the effect of light on water in the cell. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I don't know too much about this. I know that it's one of the alternate hypotheses to explain the effects of light therapy. It might be that this is happening in addition to the cytochrome mechanism we've discussed. You know, supposedly the light is influencing the surface tension of the water in a cell. You know, this crosses over into Dr. Gerald Pollack's work on easy water, or exclusion zone water to some extent. So basically the water is becoming more structured. You know, that's helping cellular function. The surface of the cell is more negatively charged, and that's somehow helping function. But to really understand this, I'd encourage people just to look into the work of Dr. Gerald Pollack.
Have you looked at DNA synthesis or protein conformation? That's another thing that came up as well.
I haven't looked into this that much either. I know that the increased CO2 from light therapy has an effect on DNA synthesis. And also, like we mentioned, the low levels of reactive oxygen species may play a role here, but I'm not too familiar with the specifics of this hypothesis.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Have you read the heel spurs article?
Yeah, that's a great article, isn't it? Really long, lots of information.
Yeah, it really is. And he goes into a lot of the different factors of skin and the properties of cells and things and the penetration of light.
I suppose that this is something that anyone can experience by just shining a torch through their hand, for example, or, you know, just looking at the sun with your eyes closed, for example. You know, I think the optical properties of our body are really interesting, you know, like different wavelengths being either reflected or absorbed or scattered. Green light, for example, is absorbed by our tissue or the water in our cells fairly rapidly and just converted to heat energy. I think this is down just to cellular water, but there's also, you know, millions of other molecules in our bodies, you know, the DNA, the ribosomes, fat tissue, you know, all different things that exist in our body to block light. And my understanding is just that red light is absorbed blocked to a lower degree than green is, so it can penetrate reasonably well. And then infrared light in the 700 to 900 nanometer range is absorbed or blocked rather to an even lower degree than red light. So this just means that the near infrared light can pass through quite a few inches of tissue before it either hits a water molecule and is converted into heat, or hopefully hits a cytochrome copper atom.
Another paper I read, it was talking about the low levels of hair in humans was because of our increased energy needs.
Yeah, I mean, this whole optical window, as it's called, of red and infrared light into our body, it seems to go back right to the whole, you know, the creation of life, you know, the first cell, in that, you know, red and infrared light seems good for all species, you know, not just mammals, but, you know, snails, mollusks, you know, fish, even insect, you know, it seems like red and infrared light were perhaps something that helped life to start, you know, right back at the dawn of time.
Yeah, I was watching a talk the other day. It was experiments showing that amino acids with infrared and in the presence of sugar formed proteins.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've read also that the atmosphere of the Earth billions of years ago was, you know, was a lot different, less oxygen, more CO2 in the environment, that sort of thing. And the way that sunlight penetrates through the atmosphere would have been a lot different. And there would have been a much higher degree of red and infrared actually hitting the surface of the Earth from the sun, you know, back 2 billion, 3 billion years ago, whenever that first started. So, interesting.
Yeah. And have you looked at, I think we talked about thyroid and testosterone. Have you looked at any of the effects on other hormones? I think I heard someone say it increases progesterone synthesis, but I couldn't find a reference for that.
I think light therapy is going to affect all of our steroid hormones, either directly or indirectly. We know that the proportion of hormones like progesterone to estrogen are linked to cortisol, which is itself linked to thyroid hormone. And light therapy through the increasing CO2 and ATP levels is going to help reduce cortisol. And that's just going to have downstream effects on, you know, progesterone to estrogen ratio in our body. And, you know, not to mention that the increased thyroid hormone levels that you might get from light therapy helps with steroid synthesis, you know, from cholesterol. So, you know, there's some evidence that testosterone levels can be improved both with direct exposure to the testicles, and then also testosterone can be improved by the effects of thyroid hormone. So basically all of these steroid hormones like progesterone are linked to energy metabolism. So it's not really a surprise that light helps that. It's not necessarily a direct stimulation. It might be indirect, but it's definitely helping.
Yeah, so once you affect thyroid, you're going to be affecting everything else anyway.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think we talked a little bit about the local and systemic effects of the scent. Vladimir Hiskanen showed a study in rodents, and Kellogg noted it too over 100 years ago. Have you any idea what the mechanisms are for the systemic effects? I assume there's probably many.
Yeah, no, definitely there's lots of things. I mean, I've seen a study showing effects on a pig's heart from light exposure to the pig's feet. So the pig had a heart attack, and then they used light on the feet, and that seemed to improve healing in the heart. So I think the benefits come through the blood, for one. So, you know, red blood cells don't have mitochondria, but white blood cells do, platelets and various other components of blood will all be affected by the light because they have mitochondria. The increased production of CO2 locally in local tissue, is some of it's going to diffuse into the blood, and that will be passed around to different areas of the body. So it's another potential mechanism. And then you have things just like bone marrow. So the bones in your hand produce red blood cells, and using light on your hand will improve the red blood cell function, and those red blood cells are going to travel all around the body. So you know, there's just lots of potential mechanisms. But I guess a good way to think of it is that our body is interconnected. You know, all different parts of our body are interconnected. Even though, you know, we reduce them into organs and limbs and the brain and the skin, but it's all just one big interconnected system. So it's not a surprise that, you know, shining light on one area is going to have systemic effects, really.
Yeah, it makes sense. There seems to be a very strong anti-inflammatory effect, and that is probably multiple mechanisms with that as well. Have you looked into those mechanisms?
This is one of the main effects of light therapy that people talk about. So from my research, inflammation is quite a complicated topic, you know, involving various hormones, different chemicals, things like prostaglandins and serotonin. And I think one mechanism at play is by light therapy indirectly reducing the formation of serotonin and estrogen. But I think, you know, a lack of carbon dioxide is linked to inflammation. I think that's because carbon dioxide inhibits the formation of prostaglandins, and they're strongly linked to inflammation. So since light therapy increases carbon dioxide, it's also going to reduce prostaglandin levels, and therefore it's going to reduce inflammation. But I'm sure it's not just the carbon dioxide. You know, there's various hormonal and different mechanisms involved in the inflammation, which light therapy is going to help with.
One of the rabbit holes I went down, I noticed that nitric oxide, histamine, estrogen, serotonin, when you bring any of those up, the rest tend to come up as well.
Yeah, they're all linked like that, and all the stress hormones rise together.
And then on the lowering of antibodies and the increase in thyroid hormones.
There's quite a few studies on this now in humans. I'm not too sure about the mechanisms. I think the improved thyroid hormone production is just that the thyroid gland cells are able to produce more energy themselves, you know, more ATP. And that helps with their function, which is, you know, T4 production. But I think the lowering of antibodies, I assume, is something to do with reduced inflammation and reduced cell death. But really, I need to read into autoimmunity a bit more to properly answer that.
Yeah, there seems to be a very strong correlation with estrogen, so that could be a factor too.
And that's all linked to reduced energy production as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you looked at the studies on dentine regrowth? Have you any ideas on the mechanisms there?
Yeah. I find this quite interesting with the teeth. As far as I understand it, the structure of our teeth is the outer layer is enamel, and then underneath that you have the dentin. And towards the edges of the dentin, we have these cells called odontoblasts. which are responsible for building and maintaining the dentin. So the enamel on the top of a tooth is harder to regenerate, but the dentin layer can actually be regenerated, and you know, there's active cells working on the structure there. So light, red light, infrared light, is basically acting on these odontoblast cells in our teeth, going through the same mechanism as with any cell, improving energy production, and therefore that leads to improved structure, improved function, and healthier teeth.
Lasers in the brain, it's always an interesting subject. Have you looked at the studies? I know it's probably a lot higher energy than...
Yeah, there's a lot of studies on Alzheimer's and, you know, Parkinson's, different types of dementia. So I think to some extent, it's just the improved ATP production giving the brain more energy, but there are different mechanisms besides just the ATP production. So the increased CO2 production is also going to have a big effect with an increase in vasodilation and a better blood flow to the brain. You know, I've seen studies showing up to a 400% increase in blood flow just when the CO2 levels are increased slightly. So after light therapy, you're going to have more ATP production in the brain cells, but you're also going to have much better blood flow, more nutrients, more glucose coming into the brain, and all the toxins that are produced in the brain will be moved out more quickly by the better blood flow. So it's just on several levels improving not just the local brain function, but also how the blood is interacting with the brain. So probably other mechanisms as well.
Yeah, I think the brain's need for glucose and the effect on glucose oxidation might be a factor.
Alzheimer's is sometimes called diabetes type 3, isn't it? Where the brain isn't able to use glucose. It's not able to go through that oxidative metabolism process. And I think light therapy might be helping with that as well.
There's a lot of data on heart attack and stroke prevention and recovery. Probably similar mechanisms. What do you think?
Yeah, again, this isn't something I've looked into in great detail, but I've seen animal studies on recovery from strokes and heart attacks. In this one study, I saw the animals were treated with light therapy directly after a heart attack, and they had significantly reduced incidence of scarring and fibrosis when the organs healed. So the control group, after a heart attack, their heart would heal with all this, you know, fibrosis and scar tissue all over it. But it was a pig study where the pig had a heart attack, and then they used, I think it was infrared light on the foot of the pig, and that stopped the scarring, or it allowed the heart to heal without scarring after the heart attack. So it basically gave perfect healing. You know, so really big improvement in recovery after a heart attack. I'm not sure I've seen anything on the prevention of heart attacks specifically, but you know, all of the effects such as increased vasodilation, improved CO2 levels should all help with prevention.
Yeah, I think I saw a similar study to that pig study that you're talking about, but on rodents, and it was nearly exactly the same. It was light on the foot affecting heart tissue.
It seems improved energy production really goes a long way to stop fibrosis and scarring. You know, whenever I get an injury or any sort of wound in my skin, one of the first things I do is just get the red light on there, you know, because I want it to heal fast and I don't want any scar tissue to heal as well. And that applies all, you know, to the inside of your body just as much as it does to your skin.
Yeah, I've seen a huge effect actually from any sort of scars or anything, even from sunlight or from red light. It really heals a lot quicker.
You know, it's the ATP, it's the improved CO2, it's all having a big effect.
Okay, well, I think that's all the questions I have for you today. I'm sure I could keep asking you questions, but we have to stop at some stage. Thanks for coming on. It was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, you're welcome, Shane. Thanks for inviting me on your show.